Senate Education Committee to order. It's Monday, January 29th, 2018. The time is 8 a.m. And in attendance are myself, Senator Stevens, chairing, Senator Giesel, Senator Coghill, Senator Begich, and I'm sure Senator Hughes will be here shortly. Representative.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hesitate to say that the House Education Committee is going to show up this morning as there have been airplane issues, but I am here, chair of the House Education Committee, and as my members drift in, I will introduce them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So today we're going to be hearing from the State Board of Education Early Development about the Alaska Education Challenge. Following that, we'll have a presentation on professional development opportunities by the League of Alaska Education Innovators. A couple of things before we begin. We have some technical problems in the room, so a limited number of microphones. We'll just do the best we can. And I'm going to have to leave a little early, so about 5 to 9, and I'll turn it over to Representative Drummond. So let's, and we don't have, James Fields did not. Oh, he's here. Great, great. I know there's been some airplane problems, but pleased to have you with us, Mr. Fields, and Commissioner of Education, Dr. Michael Johnson. Please come up and join us, if you will, and state your name for the – and Dr. Johnson, if you'd come up as well, state your name for the record.
And while they're getting seated, Representative Tallarico has arrived.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chair. James Fields, for the record, chairman of the Department of State Board of Education.
And Michael Johnson, Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We are grateful for the opportunity to have a joint meeting with the Senate and House Education Committees. We are here as individual board members and look forward to sharing our separate opinions and ideas. Any official positions expressed by the board are through regulation and to a limited degree resolutions. As chair, I think this type of interaction between board members and committee members is helpful to all of us. I will keep my comments short so you can go ahead and interact with the rest of the board. I'd like to introduce each board member and have them introduce themselves. So if we could just go around. I don't know if you're going to be able to hear them or not, but they'll just, if you can go ahead and speak up. Go ahead.
Yeah. Dr. Keith Hamilton.
I'm Sue Hall from Fairbanks, and this is my last state board meeting.
I'm Candace Waring from Solana.
Charles Michael from Palmer.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Hoshute from Sitka.
I'm Barbara Thompson from Douglas, Alaska.
Kenny Gallahorn from Kotzebue.
Thank you.
Thank you. And just let me comment on Sue. I mean, you've been around here for so long with us. How many years on the board?
5 years.
Well, thank you.
But I had 5 years back in the 80s. Too.
Right.
So you're right. I've been hanging around a long time.
Well, it's great to have you here, and thank you for your service as well as everyone else on the board. Mr. Fields.
Thank you. Member John Harmon from Palmer area, he was our second vice chair, but is not here today. John resigned to focus on his new role as chancellor of the Catholic Church, so he's a board member that's not here. And then Lieutenant Colonel Spencer Van Meter, who is the military advisor, isn't able to join us, too. So those are the other board members that aren't present. To continue on, 2017 was a busy year as we began both the Alaska Education Challenge and the development of our plan for the Every Student Succeeds Act. I want to thank each of you for participating in Alaska's Education Challenge and attending those meetings along with parents, students, educators, and others. Your engagement in those meetings inspired other participants and reassured folks that the process included a level of accountability. The State Board of Education is committed to the mission, vision, the three commitments, and the strategic priorities that they have laid out with the 13 recommendations that came out of the Alaska Education Challenge. Our education partners have helped develop and rallied around the three commitments that we hope every Alaskan will share. The three overarching commitments focus the five priorities, the 13 recommendations, and the new accountability system in Alaska's ESSA plan. Those overarching commitments are increase student success, cultivate safety and well-being, and support responsible and reflective learning. With talking with commissioner and other stakeholders in Alaska, I believe the Board of Education has given the Department of Education the information and direction that they need to start moving our student achievement gaps in the right direction. And I would include in that Alaskans in general, because the AK Challenge brought together over 4,000 comments and over 100 Alaskans working together for those recommendations that we came up with. We look forward in working with the legislature, with administrators, with teachers, with parents, and community members in the coming years to do what is necessary to give every student an excellent education every day. With that, I'd like to open it up for an open forum of dialogue with the rest of the board. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fields. Representative Drummond, you have a couple more members here?
I have Representative Parrish has joined us. And Representative Johnston. All right.
Thank you. Now, are we going on to you, Dr. Johnston? Is that the plan, or did you have some? You okay at this point?
Yeah, we're ready for questions or comments, or if you have, like you say, we really want to just leave it open. If you have questions for board members to give their opinions on what their thoughts are, next steps, whatever it is, the AK Challenge or anything in education.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments at this point? Yes,
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm really interested in how we're going to move forward with the Alaska Education Challenge and like your thoughts on that.
Whoever's ready.
And if you'd come forward, we only have, like I say, a couple of microphones, so. And for the record.
Rebecca Hemshute and member of the State Board from Sitka. I feel awkward trying to answer the question myself because we all have our own ideas of what might be coming. I think the very first thing that we need to focus on is the fact that we are finally all swimming in the same direction. We've got some unity going, and that is, I think, the greatest outcome. There's a lot more coming, and what the steps will actually be, I think, is still to be determined. So I don't want to be too vague, but I think other board members could add to that. We have those 13 recommendations, but I think the three commitments that we kind of pulled those together into will guide what happens next. I think a lot of what happens next will be determined locally, as it should be, and in partnership, which I think is a new thing that we're finding out of the challenge, is the partnerships are stronger than ever. And I think other people could add to that. I think that's kind of an incomplete answer.
Thank you very much. Any further comments from the board?
Chair Fields here. I think the next steps are already happening. I think with the partnerships, the board was wise in bringing on those partnerships early. The commissioner also fostered those relationships. So as we move forward, it wasn't the department or the board putting emphasis on things and saying this is the way you're going to do them, but what works and what doesn't, and how do we move forward with the partners we do have so that we're all on one team. We're all trying to make achievement better, make it stronger, and get those gaps filled in. And I think the partners are doing a huge job in that. And the board has laid out the vision, the strategic plan. Now it's up to the department and our partners and all the districts in the state to basically take that and own it. And I think you're going to hear a presentation later on that shows that. And I think the board is very receptive to that and really wants that leadership to be taken over by those districts, because that's really where the work has to be done. Any other comments?
Ms. Hall, this is your last chance.
Sue Hall, for the record, yeah. I might be over-participating today get in my last lick. I just want to add to what James says, because it kind of sounds like a cop-out. You know, well, we've got these partnerships and things are happening. But sometimes people, in fact, I got a call in the last couple of months from someone who said, well, you're on the State Board of Education. You know, you should take care of this concern that I have. And it was really something that's decided at the local level. You folks know Harriet and Gary have served on local school boards. I mean, the local school boards make decisions about curriculum, about staffing, the kinds of things that sometimes people think the State Board does. And so in James's answer, what he's saying is that the State Board really has limited ability to force something to happen. So this partnerships notion is really powerful, because that's where the work has to happen, with superintendents making administrative decisions and boards making policy decisions. And the State Board of Education, frankly, did its job in setting the policy direction, and we're grateful that the rest of the education stakeholders, at least to date, have come together and said those are the right things. You identified the right things, and then they've worked together to come up with these recommendations. So this notion of partnership really is not just a cop-out. It really is at the heart of making change, because we have to change student performance in this state. We really have to do hard work. It's not going to come easy. And the state board can't make that happen without all those other people.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. A question? Comment?
In addition to announcing that Representative Onholz has joined us, can we talk a little bit about who the partners are, since they're going to be critical to this effort?
Would you like to do that? Sue Hall, for the record. AASB, the Association of Alaska School Boards, that's the policy arm. The Council of Alaska of School Administrators, the Alaska Council of School Administrators, which is principals and superintendents. Mm-hmm. NEA Alaska has been an active partner. We're grateful for their support. The PTA, the Alaska PTA, has been involved. And then stakeholders and community members, the Alaska Native Regional Corporations were involved in the Alaska Challenge, and other representatives from key groups. And we really hope to involve the public generally, because one of the key things here is changing expectations. Really, school boards can't change student performance until families and communities are engaged and telling kids this is important. So the community piece is more than critical, more than essential. I mean, it's the foundation. So if people don't understand where we're headed, that's why it takes time to get. We've got all of the tops focused in the same direction, but now getting people on the street to really understand what the Alaska Challenge might mean for kids, that's a bigger job, and it's going to take some time. Mm-hmm. So I'm grateful that the department and the commissioner, under their leadership, that we're taking the time to do that.
Thank you. We know it takes a lot of hard work. We appreciate the effort you have put in over the years. Thank you very much, Sue. Any further questions or comments? Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to point out in the back of the challenge report are the list of the members that participated in the year-long or the six-month-long effort.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Cargill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Many of us got to be involved in it, but what I think Alaskans generally don't know is how this process was assembled and what the discussion was. And so I think probably just for those who are going to listen in on what we're doing, it would be a good thing if either the commissioner or the chairman here would explain to us how they assembled this and coalesced around these three major ideas. I think it would be good for people to understand that for context.
Thank you. And I think we'll get to that momentarily. Please come up, Commissioner.
Thank you. For the record, Michael Johnson, Commissioner of Education and Early Development. Through the chair, Senator Coghill, thank you for that question. So in terms of how, I'll talk a little bit about how the committees were formed, but in general, this effort really grew out of a dissatisfaction with the current achievement gap that exists in our state. So we have a lot of great things happening in education. There's some kids in this state that have really exciting opportunities, but far too many students are not benefiting from the opportunities that are provided through the public education system. And so this really grew out of a realization that, first of all, we have to be dissatisfied with that. And I've appreciated the unity that has been established around that dissatisfaction, but if that's all we were, it wouldn't change anything. And so in addition to being dissatisfied, we're optimistic that working together, we can change that. We can raise our expectations and close our achievement gap for students. And the partners that Member Hull referenced, I couldn't be more appreciative of those folks that have been willing to stand up, who work hard every day in our schools and say, we too are dissatisfied, but we're optimistic that we can change that. In terms of the committees that were formed, we sat down And the first thing we did is we said we want five parents on every single committee. We want a strong representation of Alaskans who have kids in school. And then we tried to think through all the other stakeholders and make sure we had representation from those, some of which were specific to committees. So, for instance, the Safety and Well-Being Committee, we made sure we had some healthcare folks on there. We had tribal members on all the committees. We had principals, superintendents, teachers. So we tried to make sure there was a representation. And then I'll say again, we are so grateful that legislators made time in their schedules to attend many hours of meetings on the phone and in person and participated. And I think that spoke volumes to the other committee members, that there's a level of accountability involved in this process because legislators are involved, but also getting to have that interaction with you and you with them.
Thank you, Commissioner. It was a great experience. Representative Fansler, I'm sorry, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, it's been an honor to participate in the process and to see the high level of engagement from different stakeholder groups. I guess the perennial question that I must come back to is what can we do to help it succeed from here? What do you need from us in order to put these suggestions into action?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, I could answer that question, but I want to make sure that the state board members get a chance to interact with you. So one of you, why don't you come and answer it? And I can certainly add to it and answer any more questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, good to see you.
Dr. Keith Hamilton, through the chair. Money. Let's just get right to it.
You do, don't you?
Yeah. Money doesn't solve everything. Our need for resources in our state are huge. They're broad. Everything from broadband issues to our rural districts to figuring out how to get a counselor in every school, at least if they're sharing a counselor. We have so many schools today that are without that opportunity, and it's affecting the ability for students to flourish. We're going to need support, big-time support, for one of the strong things that are happening in our state and others is a trauma that's happening, and trauma-informed practices. We need to figure that one out, as that recommendation is high on my chart under safety and well-being. I was a part of that subcommittee, and that's going to take effort of resources. There's no question. Another piece that I've looked at just personally in my own family is the whole issue around absenteeism in our state. We're number one. We have another record that we win in across the nation, unfortunately, and that's going to take a whole village, I guess, to fix that. So it's going to be resources from you folks in the legislature and from the governor to help us to articulate that as we move forward. It comes down to resources. We need resources from you folks.
Thank you. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in the spirit of dialogue, my comment to you and maybe a proactive challenge to the board and to the commissioner would be to help us connect the dots. You know, you have the members that are here, the seven and the five, from these committees, but frankly, most members of the legislature aren't familiar with the challenge or with the goals of the challenge, and certainly the broad Alaska public isn't. And what I would ask the board to do would be to look at the efforts that we make in this body, the legislation that's proposed, and the things that we're doing, and to proactively comment, not passively wait to see if we're actually applying the lessons and the learning from the challenge to that legislation, but in fact commenting on it in a more proactive way, saying, yes, that fits here, and that fits there, and that fits there. This is consistent with our plan, so that we have a more directive approach to, you know, the advisory role that the board plays for the state in terms of education. That, to me, I think would be a challenge I would put on the board, and I would hope that the board would take up, because I think that we're going to turn over here. You know, every 2 years there's new people here. And knowing that the consistency of the board, whether it's the 10 years of service from Member Hall or your own service, that's That's what's going to make a difference in whether or not we continue to have consistent education policy in the state of Alaska. So I would deeply encourage you to do that.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Representative.
Thank you. I heard you. Money. First word out of your mouth. Dr. Hamilton, I'm pleased to say that the House has a bill, HB 287, for early funding of the foundation formula, and we keep an eye on that. We hope to move it out quickly and soon. We realize it's not an increase in funding, but it's predictable funding at the same level as in the recent past, and hope to make a difference in additional funding at another date. But in terms of early predictable funding to avoid the headaches of pink slipping and the disruption that causes, we're very hopeful that we can move that out quickly and allow districts to focus on the things that they do best.
Well, I want to say thank you. I can only speak for myself, but that kind of stewardship is what's going to help us to move forward quickly to implement some of these things under the challenge and not have to wait to see what the formula ends up being. So
exactly.
I encourage all of you in legislature to move that quickly and to get us there quickly. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Well, everyone in this room shows up, which is great. But I don't know how we solve the problem of absenteeism. I mean, we're not the ones that are absent, but how do we move ahead to make sure that students attend school and don't drop out and don't disappear, don't fall between the cracks? So a big issue. Look forward to hearing from you in the future on that. Okay, we need to move on if we can then. Thank you very much. If there's no further questions, I'd ask Commissioner to come forward again. Commissioner Johnson. This was a great experience. I think all of us who were involved really appreciated the opportunity to meet the board members and the other committee members, and appreciate any more comments you have, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Stevens. Another note of appreciation for the State Board of Education for starting this effort with their strategic planning, the governor, legislators, and then all the partners that have kept us going forward. And I think next in your hearing this morning, you're going to hear from some of those partners. The Superintendent's Association and the NEA both have been working together along with ASB, and I think you're going to hear some information from them that gives some more clarity to next steps that are going to be happening, that are already happening out there, driven by those in the field. And I think you'll appreciate what they have to share. So we appreciate you providing this time in your schedule.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Fields.
If I could just make a closing comment. Sue and I are the longest tenured on the state board, and my goal from when I got on there till now is to try to be proactive, try to have the board be transparent, and really open up the dialogue with legislature, with the stakeholders, and not just have a department that just does what they do and has very little input. So I thank you for that challenge. Sometimes that may be difficult for the board because we don't get together that often. So trying to come up with resolutions or come up with that stuff, it can be difficult, but we can talk to the commissioner and try to figure out if there's something we can do to help with that effort. And I think what the department will try to do is obviously every single thing we do is try to align that with the strategic priorities with those buckets that we've created, those commitments. But I can tell you from when I first got on the board till now, just the level of transparency, the level of communication between the legislature and the board is night and day. There's no question. So I want to, as the chair, as part of this board, at this point the governor has reappointed me for another 5-year term. So if you guys are willing to have me, then I'll be here. My goal will still continue to create transparency, to create that relationship between the legislature and the board, for sure, to try to move education forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hills. Congratulations. We look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Would it be okay if I said another couple things?
Yes, please.
Okay, great. So this is Rebecca Hemshoot for the record, and I'm not responding to a particular question, but through the chair, I wanted to just also maybe respond to Senator Begich, and I agree with you, the need for us to be involved as legislation is being generated, I think, is a great need. And so I would like the partnerships that are now moving all in the same direction are a great place for you to think of us as resources, whether it's ACSA or NEA or the state board members. You can always ask us, hey, I have this idea. What do you think? And we're going to be more than happy to tell you what we think most of the time. And I wanted to also speak to the absenteeism problem that we have in this state. Over a quarter of our kids are chronically absent in Alaska. We need to change that. The word commitments to me, the three commitments that we're bringing to you, when we say commitment, this isn't saying that teachers are going to fix this. Without teachers, it won't change. But it's not just the teachers. We're saying we're committed as Alaskans. That's Alaskan families, mm-hmm. Alaskan businesses, Alaskan communities, Alaskan tribes. So it's a two-way street. It's the teachers saying we're here, we're solid, we're behind these commitments 100%. But it's not just us. We as a state, all of us together, can change that. But not just one group can get that done. So I wanted to add that. Thanks.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward to your keeping us up to date on changes in absenteeism. I see the commissioner escaped. Who's responsible for him? Oh, there he is. So do I understand, Commissioner, are you going to present the results of the study of the Alaska Education Challenge?
Chair Stevens, I'm sorry, do you mean right now or?
Yes.
the results of the AKED challenge. So I had not planned to do a presentation. This was
okay.
More
you
for the board. I think the folks that have arranged to speak next have some. I can, though, summarize and say through the AKED challenge, what became apparent, so the AKED challenge work, parallel to that was the development of ESSA, which includes a new accountability system for Alaska schools. That's much more of a checklist type of program that comes from the federal government, the Every Student Succeeds Act. It includes a accountability system. Both of those together, we had over 4,000 comments in the ESSA development process. We had almost 15,000 in the AKED challenge process. What became apparent is that Alaskans were really focused on three primary commitments, and that is increase student success, cultivate safety and well-being, and then support responsible and reflective learning. Within all those, there's recommendations specific to the challenge and new policies that will be part of the Every Student Succeeds Act. But in summary, what came out of all that work are these three commitments that people are lining up, our stakeholders are lining up with, to do something about this dissatisfaction with the achievement gap that exists in our state.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So is my understanding the board is going to make a further presentation on specifics of the commitments or not?
I think we just had it.
Well, I think we need to hear more. I think it needs to be fleshed out. Would the board comment on those three commitments so we understand them more fully? Thank you.
I'm Barbara Thompson. You're the chair. The commitment that I'm most familiar with and feel very strongly about is the improving student learning and success. And I think it's important that what came out of this challenge and the meetings we had and all of the input from our committee members and others is that this is different. It's a focus on the student and more student-driven from anything relating to delivery of education, how it can be delivered to the student, or how the student can get it through the community and other partners in the community. But it is a student focus, and it is a redefining of what a successful student looks like. It's not enough to say a student is successful if they do well on the statewide assessments. To say that because they can do English and be proficient in English language arts and math, we are redefining what a successful student looks like with regard to those items that you would find in civics education. Are they good students? Are they good citizens? Are they good human beings? Are they participating? Can they work well with others? Sometimes those are called soft skills, but it is a redefining of what success looks like and addressing that and having opportunities for students to experience that along with their content. I mean, it is important to move the needle on the achievement gap, but I think what's going to move it is having those students involved in ways that they might not have been involved in their school, in their communities, and in their government and in the nation. So I think all of that can lend itself to student improvement in ways that we have not fully attacked and addressed in the past. And to provide more resources to students, and or we're hoping that another good look is taken at funding early education. Early learning is a huge area that can show great benefits in the long run. But we want to look at more than just reading, writing, math, and the whole student, so that would increase engagement and improvement.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Well, you know, part of success is finding a job and having a career. And just pass on one thing we've heard last week from the Air Carriers Association is they can't find pilots. Mm-hmm. The small air companies around Alaska just cannot find local folks for those jobs. I know that's high school and beyond, but we need to really work on that and make sure that we fill those positions.
Yes, and there was a great deal of discussion and recommendations related to career and technical education.
Sure.
And growing the state's economy through its students and their goals.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Any questions, comments? Please.
Kenny Gallahorn for the record, and more of a general comment, sorry. But one of the things mentioned was forward funding. That's so important, probably more than the amount. I mean, we have to get some kind of stabilization here in our education. And I'm more of a let's get it done type of guy. So we need to move forward quickly as possible. We're statewide, we're not doing well in education. Rural Alaska is not doing that well. We can't really afford to wait 5 years, 10 years, 3 years. We need to get this moving. And somebody asked earlier what you can do to help us. Hold us accountable. Let's not meet about this 5 years from now. Hold us accountable. Let's do something. Let's make education better. And I think we've started on the right path. I think we've reached a high level of commitment statewide. So the time is to do something about it. Let's get it done. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There are many ways to solve the problem of pink slips, and House is moving ahead on forward funding. The Senate passed a bill out of education to create a date of April 1st. Lots of ways to do this. I'm not concerned about what bill it is or who gets the credit, but rather that we move ahead in some way. So I think the finance committees will be considering it, and hopefully, I think there's enough concern on the part of the legislature that we will find a way to avoid that pink slip problem that has been just so hard on every district. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Hall.
For the record, Sue Hall, I just want to add, while there's time, I'll fill in a little. First, I'd like to say this notion of what we expect of kids, all of us, you and the state board and stakeholders, families, folks need to be thinking about what is it that kids need to know and be able to really do in the future. Our system has been driven by these, you know, distinct subject areas and getting credits in those. And really what we're learning is the world doesn't operate that way, and that preparing kids for the future will be much different. If I were queen, I would say the first thing we need to do is really identify what it is kids really need to be able to know and do in the future. And I think it's recently there was a study, just in the last week I read a thing about Google, looked at their employees, and they had in their hiring practices always prioritized technical knowledge, computer science, et cetera, those things related to their business. And but they did a study recently about who was successful and over these many years, who's been retained and who's been let go and what were the skills that those people had, and found that the technical skills, computer skills, were the bottom of the list. And we all know that. It's soft skills. And so they're talking about hiring liberal arts graduates instead of just computer science majors, because they're finding folks to be more successful that way. How do we get communication, collaboration, creativity, you know, all of the confidence? How do we get those things in our curriculum when we've been kind of wedded to this system that we currently have? I think that, that's worth examination. What is it really that kids need? We know that we're not doing a good job with computer science with kids. We're not, people are just now talking about coding, and we all know we're behind the eight ball. So we need to look at apprenticeships. I believe we're boring high school boys to tears. Talk. I have a grandson at Lathrop who is a biology kid. He mushes dogs. He loves experimenting for the science fair and et cetera. And I said, what's the class you don't like most? You know, which one do you hate most? And he's like, biology. I'm like, Graham, you are a biology kid. You're a science kid. But it's how it's being taught. And he says, she just talks. I mean, these kids can be doing stuff out in the world. There are other states that have really moved forward with apprenticeships in ways that we have not. And I'm really not talking about the old CTE, like, I mean, this can be doctors, lawyer, it can be any profession in the community. We really should be having kids get credit outside our buildings. And I think there's a lot more that can be done. And those things were discussed during the Alaska Education Challenge. And I just want to make a comment. My colleague, Dr. Hamilton, mentioned that money's what's needed. I would just add to that, really, it's strategic use of dollars. You know, I mean, we're not asking, the State Board of Education isn't asking you for a bunch of money to do the Alaska Education Challenge. It's going to require the associations to kind of ante up and school districts to repurpose funds for the right kinds of priorities. And I think for the legislature, we're really not asking you to pass a lot of legislation because it doesn't require a lot of legislation. It requires this alignment, a focus, and a sense of purpose, and then utilizing it in new ways.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. You are the queen in our minds, so don't worry about that. Let's see. Let's move on to let me recognize that Senator Hughes is here with us. Thank you, Senator Hughes. Can't see you there, but thank you for being here. And
have him go first.
Okay, please, go ahead.
Member Michael, for the record. I'd just like to add to what Ms. Hall had to say. I think career technical education is like the most important thing that to be teaching in high schools. I go to a school centered around career and technical education. Even smaller schools in my district, like Reddington Junior Senior, have been moving towards career and technical education. I think that the three R's is not what needs to be taught right now. I think, like you were saying earlier, about how there's a shortage of pilots, there's a shortage of teachers, there's a shortage of construction workers, there's a shortage of people in the health industry. Those are all skills that can be taught at the high school level. You can get your private pilot's license before you graduate. I know people who have gotten their private pilot's license before they graduated. You can become a certified nurse's assistant before you graduate. Stuff like that can be taught. I don't know why it's not being in more places. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks for your comment. Thank you. Yes, Representative Johnson.
It seems now we're getting more into what the report was about, and I thank you for that, for continuing it. There were a couple big game changers, I felt, with this report, and I'm glad to hear that they don't necessarily require legislation. because it does seem like it's a strengthening of public-private partnerships and community partnerships, which is totally different than how we've looked at education in the past, where it's something that we provide in our strictest sense. So I commend this effort, and I hope we don't lose sight of what it is. It's not what we're doing. It's more what the community and the state's doing, and we should just be sure to get out of the way. But that being said, sorry, but I believe that. One of the biggest game changers I saw take place was the tribal partnership. And if there's an opportunity to go a little bit further in that or discuss if there's been any development of that yet, any ideas as far as MOUs similar to what's happened in the health care, I would be interested if somebody would like to report on that.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Very good point. We do need to get out of the way. And Mr. Fields, can you comment on the tribal partnership?
Through the chair is James Fields, Representative Johnson. I don't know of any developments yet. That would probably be the commissioner since he's here on a day-to-day basis. So I would ask if he had comment on that, he could come up. And then I'd like to, if there weren't any other questions, I'd like to talk about the Cultivate Safety and Well-Being after the commissioner's done.
Yeah, very good. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, thank you for that question. So I agree with you. I think that's a very exciting development and a challenge. And I think that it has the potential to be a conversation that extends even beyond just the tribal partnerships, but to the education system as a whole, and create some positive change there. So First Alaskans Institute has been a wonderful partner in understanding what this conversation can be, how to have those conversations, how to develop it. One of the things that we are starting with is the realization that this conversation may be different from past tribal compacting conversations in that the governance structure that already exists in the public education system gives local school boards the opportunity to have those discussions with their local tribes already. So there's not necessarily legislation or regulation that needs to take place before those conversations happen. Having said that, as those conversations develop, then it may be something that the legislature will have to address in terms of statewide or any legislation that would hinder those local conversations. But already, I've been very encouraged, contacted by a school board who has already begun the conversation in their school district, a superintendent that has expressed readiness to engage in some kind of agreement. And so I think it can be a very healthy thing for the entire system, and I look forward to it. There are tribes that are ready, willing, and able to take a greater role in the public education system in their local communities.
Follow up?
Yes, please, Representative.
I was involved with Cook Inlet Tribal Council, and they have been doing a partnership with Anchorage School District for, imagine now, at least 12 to 15 years. And it's waxed and waned through the years depending on the board and the superintendent. But it's actually now they're basically doing is STEM is what they're bringing into the school district. But it is something that's already established.
Thank you. And we've always, I think, Alaska has always believed in local control as much as possible. This is just an extension of it, moving on to the tribes and the villages. Mr. Fields, if you'd care to now talk about safety issue, that
I put the visual up there on the screen of kind of on the left is there are five priorities, original priorities. Then we have the 13 recommendations, and then they're color coded based on the commitment down there. So the blue is the cultivate safety and well-being, which it Keith Hamilton, myself, we co-chaired that committee. And it's one of those ones that can be depressing on one hand, but sometimes you've got to highlight what's wrong in order to take action. And so as we had meetings with our committee, it was very enlightening to, and the reality is, like you brought up, Representative Johnston, there are districts that are doing very good things in every single one of these recommendations. It's just a matter of highlighting those and basically saying, okay, this is a path forward, and this is the way they did it, and then getting districts or schools to figure out what's best for them. So I think we do have a lot of the answers in the state. And I think the Superintendents Association and some of these partnerships are already looking to take surveys, okay, who's doing good in the, and highlighting those schools and districts that are doing it so we can have more of that in the state. But this is one that is a huge issue. We can talk about all sorts of apprentice programs. We can talk about how we educate. But if we don't get kids' safety and well-being in line, they can't learn. And so, like you mentioned, getting the communities involved, getting the health agencies involved, the tribal health agencies involved is critical. I've got two adopted and one that we have guardianship over that either me or my wife drive into Wasilla. We live in Glen Allen, drive into Wasilla every other week for counseling because they have traumatic situations. So if we had somebody in our community, we'd be saving a lot of time. We wouldn't be pulling them out of school. That absenteeism thing comes in because we know it's important for them to have those counseling sessions for their safety and well-being, but yet there is no provider in the community that can do that. So, again, highlighting those things, trying to get your community members involved, your community organizations involved with help some of those needs would be huge to increase moving that achievement gap closer together because that's huge. I coach basketball, and I've got kids that they want to be at practice, but they live in Chittenden or they live in Kenny Lake, 45 minutes, 60 minutes away, and their family situation is one that they have to go home and take care of their siblings because they can't get there. Well, that's basically taking the opportunity to succeed away from them, and it drives me nuts. But there's nothing I can do. I can only do so much to help these kids succeed. Whereas if we really highlight safety and well-being, like you mentioned, it's happening in the state. There are schools that are doing amazing things in this, creating an environment in their school that is rather unbelievable. It's a matter of highlighting that and basically teaching principals and teaching administrators, look, this is the path forward, and I think we can do great things. So those are some of the things that came out of our meetings and just some personal experience on this topic. I don't know if Keith has anything more to add or not, but.
Keith Hamilton through the chair. I'm a father as well, and my children are fairly well adjusted, even considering the parents they were born into with. But
it's been a struggle.
There is in our district a real variety of rural village students who come to Kenai Peninsula, as well as Old Believers villages, and then many on the road system. And like all of Alaska, there are huge differences and huge needs all the way from Tyonek to Kenai High. It's a big difference. And we know that there are children who don't make it to school every day because there is a breakdown at the very issue of every, I think, home, and that's the family. And our role as the school and our role as the deed board isn't to fix the family, although we want to give all the impression and support and help that we can to help a local family do really, really well. If those children don't make it to school and they're at home because they have to babysit or they have to take care of feeding the rest of the family, if they can't get to school, then they're not going to get two or three square meals a day. They're not going to get teachers who are teaching, educating them. They're not going to have the opportunity to have a counselor sit down with them and talk about next steps career-wise. They're not going to have when their stomach is hurting all the time and can't figure out why, have a nurse that's going to be there to help them. And there has to be some equality across our state that every student has got a shot at being healthy and whole and educated, and we are weak in providing that as a state right now, again, because of the diversity of our state. And so my heart breaks for those kids who aren't ever going to be in class because of the surrounding issues in their families. So what do? We stand up for every kid. We love every kid that walks in the door. We care for their families as well. And I joked earlier about money. That was just the obvious answer. But the unobvious answer is that caring, I think is what's going to make a difference. And you can't pay people to care. They have to do it from within their heart. And so we have an amazing set of leaders across Alaska, both in this room and in schools, and meeting today right now with kids, caring for kids. So I'm sorry for the philosophy, but it's not just going to take the resources and the funds. It's going to be a story on how to make equality happen across our state. That number three that Mr. Fields is talking about, the third big priority here, we do need resources for counselors and for nurses and for trauma-informed practices. So I am going to stand with that comment made earlier.
Thank you. We've been notified that people need to remember to state their name before they speak. That was Dr. Keith Hamilton. Appreciate what you've had to say. I just want to comment that the teachers are our first line of defense.
They are.
They are the ones that protect our children. Think of all the active shooters that have entered our schools and all the heroics of teachers who put themselves between their students and that shooter. Thank God for that. And we just hope nothing happens here in Alaska. But there have been some horrible stories around the country lately that we need to be aware of. So under safety, that is one of my key points. If there is something horrible that happens, the teachers are there to train to protect our children. We have several folks who would like to speak. I think first we'll go to you, Representative Sponholz, and then to Senator Geisel.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You got me on the mic? All right. Along the sort of, the safety, the well-being and safety line, I'm sort of, you described instituting trauma-informed practices. We know that kids can't learn if they're in sort of a heightened state of alert all of the time, which is one of those things that happens when you've experienced a lot of trauma. And that's a big bite, to take off for a state. We also know that we just have to meet kids where they are. There's a lot of research that shows that, if kids can't get calm, if they can't figure out how to self-regulate, if they're not learning it at home, or if they're getting aggravated at home and they're in a constant state of sort of high alert, they're never going to be able to learn, regardless of every other strategy that we put in place. But it's such a big bite to take off, and I'm wondering if you could describe a little bit, at least, what your sort of initial thoughts and strategies are to figure out how to implement trauma-informed practices and education in Alaska.
James Fields, with the chair, I'm Sponholz. There are, and there were some members on this committee that really created principals that were on the committee that really created an environment in junior high, which some would argue would be the hardest area to create that environment, and had great success. So I think there's ways to do it with proper leadership, obviously with proper administrators, with proper staffing, teachers, aides, and having a plan that, over time, it takes time. But I think there are pockets in the state that are showing success in that. It's just a matter of basically replicating that success in other schools. So, and I think the Superintendent Association is planning on doing that.
Please. So I guess part of what I'm struggling with is to try to understand what the board's role and what Deed's role is in that, given that education is provided at the local level. Is it that we're setting expectations for that? Is it that we are, that the state is going to provide training? What's Deed and the state's role in that, given that education is provided at the local level?
I think it's all of the above. I think there's training that they've already started putting in place online training. I think it's, again, highlighting and being the advocate for the things that are working right. That's the department's – that would be the department's role. I think there will be some things that the department may put in place of – I think one of them right – one of the recommendations is that every Alaska school must work to create a sustainable and positive school climate that is safe, supportive, and engaging for all students, families, staff, and communities. So I think within the ESSA plan, within these recommendations, you'll see some of those standards come up where they've got to come up with a plan. So I think it's all of the above.
Okay, I thank you. I just, you know, want to sort of put out there that I absolutely recognize that there are a lot of amazing pockets of great trauma-informed practices. I know that, you know, Marcus Wilson with the Anchorage School District is working on sort of training other schools in the practices that he was able to implement at Northern, is it Northern Lights? No, it's the wrong name for the school. North Star Elementary. Where they were able to really change, you know, community performance in a Title I school with a lot of children who had experienced, you know, a very high level of adverse childhood experiences. I just wanted to sort of draw out on the conversation, you know, what it is that the state's role is, because I think this is probably one of the areas where there's a really high return on investment. And I'll just add a personal note that one of my daughters is you know, on the fetal alcohol spectrum, and she joined our family when she was 9 years old. And so, you know, it took us a little while to sort of learn how to parent her. And one of the big things that we learned was to sort of reorient ourselves to her reality and to meet her where she was. And that included sort of, you know, helping her to de-escalate in situations. And I know that teachers are facing this on the front line every day. And if, you know, we had to struggle to figure out how to do this with one child, I have just a great deal of empathy for teachers who are struggling sometimes to do this with whole classrooms full of people who are struggling to figure out how to get out of fight or flight and into, you know, a calm, you know, thoughtful approach where you can actually welcome learning and insight. So. Thank you.
Thank you.
So through the chair, I wanted to also address what Representative Sponholz is talking about. And I think one of
you
the
have to put your name on the
Rebecca
record.
Hemshute. Thank for you. The record. Sorry. And there's much more that I wanted to talk about. But this is a topic that's very important to me because I'm also a classroom teacher. And I was not on the committee, and the committee has done excellent work with these three recommendations. And you can see that on our three swirls, when we talk about the education challenge, there's an entire section devoted to cultivating safety and well-being, and that's because we recognize these three work, you can't say in tandem because it's three, so anyway, one supports the other, and they all three work together. But in my experience in the classroom, I would have to say, if a child is not able to get out of fight or flight, they can't learn, as you stated. So many children come to us, and they don't have families who even recognize what the children are going through. So I guess I just wanted to really highlight there's great work going on in the state. NEA Alaska, my professional organization, has been doing a lot of training for their members. Individual districts, Anchorage District spent an entire day talking about student trauma. This is a topic that is rich in schools right now, and it's probably and I know ACSA is doing a survey to find out what are the best practices across the districts in the state. There's some really great stuff happening, but how do we find those pockets of excellence and then replicate that? And that's one of the first steps, I think, in the challenge, is to find where these great things are and then replicate that in other places and make it available to other places. And I think there was another question, and then I had a few more things to say about the swirls.
If there isn't another let's see, Representative Johnson.
I think
Senator Giesel. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a nurse practitioner who practices in school-based clinics in a middle school as well as a high school in Anchorage, sadly, we have a large number of children who are dealing with mental illness, trauma. Your illustration, Mr. Fields, of having to drive long distances to find mental health counseling really illustrates we have a problem. Frankly, our state has a very large cadre of qualified mental health therapists who are frankly restrained by some of our own laws. If we could change some of those laws, which that work is underway, it actually will open the door for qualified clinicians, mental health therapists, social workers, and others to provide these services. A couple of years ago, we did a lot of work on Medicaid reform, and we opened the door for telehealth. This is another way that mental health services can be provided around the state so that there doesn't have to be the inequity that Dr. Hamilton referred to. So there is hope on the horizon, and knowing that this is a priority, particularly for you, Mr. Fields, I plan to stay in touch with you on progress in this area because it's a huge priority for me as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, and a follow-up to Senator Giesel. One, I'm always into sort of breaking down the tower aspect of services, and we have a huge health and social service department, and I wonder if it's deeds, if it's an opportunity for both the commissioners to spend time together to see where their services or where it could overlap and help each other, whether it's something also the commission would start looking into, so that we start using our resources to the best of their ability. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Thank Johnson. You reminded me that, Ms. Thompson, I heard you say earlier a focus on early education. Representative Sponholz is chair of the Health and Social Services Committee, and myself as chair of the Education Committee, are planning later this spring to take a close look at how both DEED and HESS are providing services to the birth through age 5 group of young citizens, and looking at ways to unsilo the efforts we're making for young kids across departments and focus those resources so that we make sure those kids arrive at school ready to take advantage of the huge investment we're going to make in them. And this looks like a place to also look at the social services that we're providing in both departments. Representative Johnson, I'd love it if you join us in that effort.
Thank you.
Mr. Fields, go ahead.
Board Member Hemshute wanted to talk about the last commitment, which is support responsible and reflective learners. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Thanks, through the chair. This is Rebecca Hemshute. We might seem a little scattershot this morning, but we don't see each other very often, and then there were some people who overnighted in Sitka last night and came in very early, so we hadn't really fully prepared exactly how to present this morning. So. The last swirl that we haven't talked about is kind of the biggest one, the gold-colored one, support responsible and reflective learners. And my committee that I worked with was the Educator Excellence Committee, and I can speak in great depth and at great length, and especially if you want to go have a coffee sometime, about educator excellence. But I'm going to keep it more general and talk about how that ended up becoming this commitment to support responsible and reflective learners. Both those words, responsible and reflective, are very intentional and went through a lot of vetting and discussion to get there. When we talk about a student who's reflective, that's a student who knows why they're learning. This is why I'm here. This is what I want to take away. Here's how I'm going to show that I know the things that I'm here to learn. So we need to have reflective students. Equally, we need to have reflective educators. And so the committees did a lot of work around how we can have both, how we can support students to be reflective in their learning, but also responsible. I am the one responsible for what I know and how I get to that place of knowing things. And so we expect that from our students, and we have some work going on in that gold swirl to really support our students to become reflective and responsible, and our educators.
All right. Any further comments? Representative Parrish, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just looking through the recommendations, and it was my pleasure to serve on the Educator Excellence Committee with you. And one of the things that we were asked not to do was to think about the cost of these things. But I think that coming back before the legislature now, we must. One of the recommendations is to triple the number of National Board certified teachers in Alaska through the provision of salary incentives. What do you expect that would look like from our end?
Through the chair, Rebecca Hemshute. It doesn't have to be from the legislature. That's the, I would say, most expeditious, but maybe not in current times. I can tell you what we modeled on. We looked at the state of Washington, Washington offers a $10,000 salary bonus to a National Board Certified teacher for the rest of their career. That's a state-funded incentive. They double that for an educator willing to work in a hard-to-staff school. So they're finding now that 35% of the teachers in hard-to-staff schools in Washington, they've had this program for over a decade now, 35% of the teachers in hard-to-staff schools are National Board Certified. You're lucky in Alaska, we have, I think, around 180 National Board Certified teachers, and not all of those are still in the classroom at this point. When we say triple that number, we're talking about tripling it and tripling it and tripling it. That's a continuous tripling. So once we've tripled it, it triples again and again and again. National Board Certification is the highest standard you can reach as an educator. It's a voluntary process that you pay to go through. I think the numbers are improving, but it's roughly 50% of educators who attempt the process who actually get through. So you move from a standard of do no harm to a standard of really being that reflective educator who's going to help support reflective and responsible students. It's a great goal. And again, if you'd like to have coffee at any time, give me a call and I can talk for a long time about it.
Thank you, Representative Parrish, for bringing that up. Ms. Hemshute, I will take you up on that. That just you just raised, open, turn on a light bulb over here. Senator Hughes.
Thank you. I would like to tie the last two topics together, the safety, well-being, and I had the good pleasure of having being part of that Sitka diversion and having a seat in a conversation and a chance for Ms. Hall to rehearse what she said. I got to hear it earlier. But one of the things I didn't hear her talk about was in Michigan how they really put it back on the families and that the expectations, low expectations, were just kind of accepted over time and that we've got to turn that around. So an excellent teacher, you can have an excellent teacher overcome bad situations, dysfunction in the family by being incredibly inspirational, engaging, and you hear those inspiring stories. That's tough to do. Not every teacher can do it. It's always awesome when they can. So part of my question is, part of being an excellent teacher, beyond just inspiring the student, is there any training to help excellent teachers do the very difficult, which is engage the families, because that's so key? And are we looking at any models where we can turn around maybe low expectations that families might have? Michigan, if they've been working on it, maybe they've done something as part of this safety and well-being and also as part of excellent educators, because, yes, we can in individual circumstances sometimes bypass that, and it can be a bad family situation, and we can end up with a kid that goes to Harvard, but that's not the norm. So are we doing anything on a wider scale where we're trying to figure out how we can engage communities and families and teach teachers how to do that?
Sue Hall, for the record, through the chair. Thank you for that question, Senator Hughes, because I've been thinking as others were talking about this topic, I have to get in my licks about it, because we can't take over for families. Mm-hmm. The reality is the more we do, the more the expectation will raise that the schools do everything, and they can't. So I don't oppose any of the recommendations, but I just want to say there has to be an effort to strengthen families. When we talk about early learning, one of the things that, you know, for long years I've been a big Best Beginnings supporter, because it was talking about really the bigger picture of early learning rather than just simply getting kids into another program, because we have to strengthen families. And the story that I was telling Senator Hughes was about, this was probably 2004 or so, so it's been a long time ago, but the Detroit News had commissioned a study of they were concerned about the economic conditions in Michigan, and they'd commissioned this study, and they chose to embargo the story and then have it as the headline on the Detroit News Sunday morning after coming to the state PTA convention, and the editor of the Detroit
Detroit News just lambasted these parents and said, the reason our economy is struggling is because of you. And, of course, these PTA moms were not all that happy about being told that, but by and large moms. But his point was that the expectations in their state had been that you don't even really need a high school diploma, but you can get a good job with the union and you can make a good living and you don't have to have higher education, and that that had changed and therefore challenged the state to step up relative to engaging families. And I think it goes with promoting safety and well-being. It goes with early learning. It goes with we should try and fill the gaps where we are able to. And I think it's wonderful to have counselor in every school. But we really also, in tandem, have to say, because we all know breakfast is now an expectation. And there are families. My kids went to the most demographically diverse school in Fairbanks for over 20 years. And I know that there's a point where folks say, what? No breakfast? You know, you're supposed to do breakfast to the school. And the more that if we don't push back a little bit on the expectation, we'll find ourselves with problems we can't solve just by more counselors. And I certainly agree with Senator Giesel about the need for clinicians, et cetera. So don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But there has to be a joint effort to strengthen families.
Senator Begich, and then we need to begin to wrap up here.
Just quickly, two comments. One, on the early learning issue, on Wednesday there will be a hearing in Senate Finance on SB 99, which is my bill that addresses pre-kindergarten, universal voluntary pre-kindergarten. So I hope, if you are in town, that folks from the board will come to that. But the more important issue is this combination of Hess and Deed working together that you guys are talking about doing. And in Alaska and Anchorage in particular, both in terms of the old Anchorage United for Youth approach, which I was involved with, and then earlier in our Reclaiming Futures work, we looked at a model that would have worked collaboratively with the Division of Family and Youth Services, which became OCS, the Office of Children's Services, where you would work collectively in putting a social worker in the school working with teachers. Because if you're asking a teacher to take on the additional responsibility of being a social worker, then you ought to compensate them for it, because the job is already almost out of hand. You're talking about hours and hours beyond the regular classroom time that teachers devote to this work. The better answer is to find those collaborative ways of merging, you know, the work of our social work community and the work of our educators, so that they're mutually informing each other. So training is important, but you can't keep putting the burden on teachers for that. And so I would suggest that in your deliberations and that Hess and Deed thing, that you look at some of these models that people looked at, where you'd at a middle school place a social worker who would work with elementary schools that were feeder schools, so that they would identify when there's an issue and proactively, again, move to those households or work with those families that are maybe having trouble. And the last thing I want to say here is be very careful in putting the burden actually back on parent blaming. Parent blaming doesn't necessarily solve the problem. Good parents do good parenting. Parents who aren't doing a good job probably need more support than blame in those efforts. So be very careful on how we approach these things. So.
I agree with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. We need to move on to the next presentation, so a brief wrap-up would be in order, if anybody wants to.
Sure. I'll just comment on the last couple of comments, and thank you for those. And
Mr. Fields, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. James right. Fields, for the record, through the chair. I know there's some good Copper River Native Association is one that is doing a lot of early learning type stuff. That's K through, birth to five, and doing some of what you're talking about, where they're bringing in the mothers, they're bringing in the fathers, because if that's really where you're going to change those family situations is early on, and doing some parenting skills and doing some family training. So there are some organizations that I'm watching to see how it goes, and actually some of these are being watched nationwide to see how they work and how it happens, because these are big issues nationwide, not just for Alaska. So getting parents early, training them early with their kids early, I think is really where it's going to happen. So Health and Human Services is big in that. So anyway, thank you for the time you've given us this morning. I think it's been productive. I think we've probably gotten some good points with being proactive, and some other things that we can keep on our radar. Thank you.
Great.
Chair Drubin, thank you to everyone on the committee for this opportunity. And given that most of these board members got about 4 hours of sleep because of missing landing in Juneau, and we had about five, and Representative Johnson too, and we had about 5 minutes with them before we came down here this morning, we survived and we got through this. I would say any of the questions, though, that you want more information on and maybe a more structured walk through the plan, we're happy to do that from the department for any community members that have questions. Just this weekend, the question about training, there was over 1,000 educators in Anchorage for the RTI conference working on things specific to what's come out of the challenge. So we can give that information. And then the state board will be back in March, and so any follow-up that is needed we can do then. But we appreciate very much your time and appreciate the state board for persevering through traveling issues, and look forward to the next opportunity.
Very good. Thank you so much. I would hate for this to be the last time we hear from Sue. I'm sure it won't. We're going to take a brief at ease to prepare for the next presentation. Thank you. Okay, I'd like to call the committee meeting, the joint committee meeting, back to order. Next up, we have the League of Alaska Education Innovators, who would like to offer an update on professional learning for educators. Go ahead, put your names on the record, and let's begin.
Thank you, Chair Drummond. For the record, my name is Sean Dusick. I'm the superintendent of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District and also past president for the Alaska Superintendents Association.
And I'm Bill Burr. I'm the assistant superintendent of Delta Greeley School District, and I'm a past president and the president-elect of the Alaska Society of Technology and Education.
And my name is Chris Benshoff. I teach at Lathrop High School in Fairbanks, and I'm the 2013 Alaska State Teacher of the Year.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you. We very much appreciate the time that you are affording us. We'll go through quickly. I know we've been here a little while, and really this is a follow-up to what the State Board was talking about. This is really ties into the three commitments. Really appreciate Commissioner Johnson asking us to share this coalition work with you today. As you can see, there is a number of partners that have already become involved in this. We started all of this work based upon the work with the Education Challenge. And the idea behind this is that even though we are diverse, you can see there's a number of organizations that will have separate professional learning opportunities. So it makes sense in attempting to be much more efficient and effective that we get all the players in the same room and we talk it through and we make sure that we are within the framework of the Ed Challenge. Every community, every school has their own particular challenges, but overall, this is a kind of a focus moving forward, and coherence is very, very important because it's like it was mentioned before, we don't want to just talk about it. We need to do something, and we need to do something now. And this group spontaneously came together, and we're doing something. Again, when we talk about the why, this is kind of where we're at. If you see that arrow at the top there, that large outline arrow is kind of the vision. And you can see internally is all the different groups. And occasionally, when the vision isn't clear and or people think they know better, they might even be working against the overall vision, which is we want our students to be ready for life and to be highly productive citizens in the state of Alaska to make this state as great as it can be. Once we've gone through the challenge, we did form the work group, and we started with just basic communication. What are you working on? What are your members need that they believe? And how does this fit with our work overall? And we are continuing to align efforts to meet the challenge. As a matter of fact, we'll be meeting couple more times by the end of this year. We're hopeful to give you an update because it's very important, as it was mentioned before, accountability. The legislature has had and taken the time some very important conversations on improving and innovating, and we want to be a part of that and help lead through that innovation process so that we can do the best that we can for every child. And, you know, we do have a lot of lighthouses out there, I call them, you know, excellence, pockets of excellence. Things are going well in several places. This group also brings that together. And how can we scale that up or in any direction with any culture, any needs? And that's very, very important. And because we would be efficient about it, you'll see common strands throughout the year as these various groups get together. And it may or may not take any more money. I'm hopeful it won't, because our districts will be focused on the Ed Challenge. So again, coordinating efforts, focusing topics, and sharing resources. And as I said, we hope to have follow-up and to get into depth on the various programs. That's why there's two other people here with me, so they can speak to some of the particulars of the opportunities that are happening with each organization. And we decided to break down into all three areas here. We'll speak to each one and with some particular things that we're working on. So first off, increasing the student success and you know, with multiple measures and varied curriculum. Some of the things that you'll see there is, yes, we want our children to be more than a test score. All right, that is an important piece. We heard something about you can't just teach the three R's, and I'm assuming that was the reading, writing, arithmetic. But we do teach to the three R's, but it's called rigor, relevance, and relationships and responsiveness. It's actually four R's. And it's a whole different ballgame, because every one of our teachers are committed to, first and foremost, caring and loving each and every child that walks into their classroom. That's the relationship part. That's being responsive. And we'll talk more about what that really means here in a little bit. And rigor, of course, is something that is very, very important. And relevance, that may help address some of that absenteeism. Also, reinventing high schools when we talk about apprenticeships. And really, a lot of the things that are happening, I want to give some shout-outs to Copper River and Sitka with their innovative schools practices that they're doing. You are seeing high-quality educators from anywhere delivering instruction in a manner that is engaging and relevant. And these two superintendents, hopefully you'll have them in front of you to talk to you about the particulars of what's happening with this league. The other piece, before I turn it over, is there are lots of ways to measure student success, and a piece that we're looking at as a group is comes from a research-based coalition called Redefining Ready, and there is a lot of key performance indicators in there that are beyond a test score. They talk a lot about participation in extracurricular activities. They talk about career certifications from industry that should be measured and provided opportunity for. They talk about the level of apprenticeships that are available. Those are the type of measures that will come out. I often refer to probably one of the biggest successes from the Kennett Peninsula is not a test score. She's a young lady from Nikolaevsk School, a Russian Old Believer School, who graduated last year and has a full ride to Georgetown and is doing incredibly successful in one of the top colleges in the country. But then I also have three young men who graduated last year with the various career certifications you needed to be able to work on the oil platform out in the Cook Inlet, and they're making more money than I am. And they are enjoying life, and they are great kids, because one of them already wants to come back and start teaching some of his former colleagues in school. So that's exciting things.
My name is Chris Benshaw, for the record. Education is a very complex issue and complex topic, and I know the educators around the state, from support staff to teachers and principals and administrators, school board members, legislators that deal with these issues, live those complexities daily. With that in mind, I'm still happy and pleased and astonished that a few weeks ago about 300 educators from around Alaska came together for NEA Alaska's annual conference and unanimously express their support with a resolution in favor of these three commitments that came out of the Alaska Education Challenge work. So we're totally on board. And I think one of the reasons for that, if you see the diagram here, educators like to frame the needs of students using a few different sort of graphics and organizers, and one of which is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If we start at the bottom, it suggests that students aren't going to be successful unless they have the physiological needs met, food, shelter, water, things like that. They need to feel safe both physically and emotionally, and they need to feel like they belong in a place. And we think that the commitments, or excuse me, the commitment for cultivating safety and well-being fits really well to those needs. As educators continue their conversation, they know that people, and not just students but adults, also have a desire for knowledge and understanding and being able to apply what they know. And we think that the commitment for increasing student success fits really well there. It's going to take multiple measures. PEAKS is one of those measures to fit in that, but it does a good job of addressing those things. And then finally, the educators that I work with strive regularly to get their students to be responsible and reflective learners. And right at the top there, we see the highest achieving students are able to analyze and synthesize and evaluate what they're doing and reflect on their own learning. And so we see the three commitments that are coming out of the education challenges fitting this model really, really well, and we know that it's the right conversation to be having as we move forward. When we think specifically about cultivating safety and well-being, I teach at Lathrop High School, and I was glad that my class wasn't Sue Hull's grandson's least favorite class. That was a relief. But I teach at Lathrop, where we have a very diverse student population, and I've had students that are well-supported at home, emotionally and financially, and they've gone on to do great things. I've also had students like that, or in a situation of struggle. But I've also had students in dire circumstances. We have kids in our school who are homeless and trying to make sure that they can feed themselves or help support their family, and they work jobs and things. And the fact that the stakeholders in Alaska are pointing their efforts towards not just student achievement and reflective and responsible student learning, but also that we're addressing the needs of safety and well-being is a relief, and I'm glad that we're headed that direction.
And Sean Dusick here, one last thing to add. As you know, a part of the whole strand that I was talking about, this is a strand that we've been focused on at all of our organizations. The Superintendents Association had some work in this particular area with the trauma-informed instruction and ACEs. And it also happened at the principals conference. There was a big strand on safety and well-being and emotional learning, and again, you've heard about the RTI conference, and very well done. And that's where we had most educators. What you're finding is, and this is where the efficiency is, that we're providing the expertise here in Alaska. We're not sending people out. We're bringing them here, and then we are coming up with plans on how to actually implement these ideas in the schools. That's really what we're working hard on.
Representative Sponholz.
Thanks. So I've heard the acronym RTI conference mentioned a couple of times, and I don't know what that is. Could you?
RTI is a framework of responding. It's called response to intervention. And so if a student's struggling, they go through a process with teachers and parents to help provide additional supports academically or sometimes occasionally behavior-wise. It's a process instead of just saying, well, because you're struggling, you're going to go into special ed. So there's that kind of that interim in between just to make sure, because not all students, just because they're having a hard time in a classroom, need to be in special ed.
Thank you. Thank you for asking that question. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a very brief comment. This is exactly what I'm talking about, being proactive and connecting the dots. Being able to take something like Maslow and Bloom and then connect it to the actual swirls, as I think Ms. Henshaw described it, this is, if you can be doing this kind of thing over and over and over again, we'll lock in the knowledge that that we've all produced, I guess, around the challenge, but we'll lock it in with people beyond those who are participatory. So please keep doing this kind of thing.
Thank you, sir. Just one last comment on that. You know, that right there in the blue, teachers have to take care of that first every morning, because if kids aren't ready to learn, they're certainly not going to get to the academic pieces. And so that really is the highest priority. And a lot of people do that well, but part of what we are trying to do is to get that learning on teachers' part so they can do it even better every single day. And it's incredibly hard work.
For the record, Bill Burr, So the my organization, Alaska Society for Technology and Education, we looked at these three commitments and tried to look at what we were doing in the past and what we were looking for in the future to meet these. So about 40 years ago, when ASTI was created, it was founded by teachers, for teachers, and so that they could go get professional development on this new thing of technology and education. The recognition of education modernization was coming. There's no greater protection in our schools, in our world, than the access to information. We see it all of the time, the ability to go out and have global thought, the ability to find information. And students are making a digital footprint now in their education, in their world. They're going to find things we hadn't even anticipated through the use of looking at their education and taking control. That's part of what personalized learning is taking that grasp of their own learning. When years ago, when Pablo Picasso was asked about computers, he said, "They're useless. They only provide you answers." And so we look at that and say, we hope that our Alaska teachers and our organization and professional development help the students ask the questions. That is a bigger role than the quick Google lookup. We have people in our state. We have a couple of them in this presentation. Eric Rush, who's a BP Teacher of the Year. We had Jethro Jones, who is the NASSP Digital Principal of the Year. We have school districts that are looking at personalized learning, looking at changing how education is done. But it's going to take some time, it's going to take some effort, and it takes forward thinking. If we give a student a laptop or a smartphone or some digital device, it doesn't increase their brain. But it might open their mind or make them use their heads. And that is our goal of looking at students, at themselves, at learning. Personalized learning, which sometimes is a buzzword, but it is a very important factor in our education. It changes and redefines what teaching and learning is. It utilizes technology, it allows flexible classrooms, and it gives student ownership of their own education. They're co-designers, that they can work at their own pace, they can work find their own path, they can work on their own time to meet their individual educational needs. Now, that doesn't mean that the students are thrown out into the world without any guidance. Having access to that technology takes context. Mm-hmm. Having access to that information, you have to sort through and find the real information. That is where personalized learning comes in. It is not a complete 100% turning over the idea of education. It is rather working with students to find that path. It's a way of looking at the future of our students who are going to be our workforce, who are going to be our bosses, who are going to be our brand new companies and corporations that we haven't even thought of, and having it so that they were interested all the way along the line. We don't need students that follow the same path. We need to find students that follow their own path. And that is where our organization, as well as this group, comes in. And it's wonderful that our organization can help in this also. Thank you.
I have some questions. Senator Hughes, did I see Senator Begich also?
No.
Okay.
This subject really excites me, and we worked in this room last year, and there was a bill, SB 96, that would really promote much of what you're saying, understanding that it still takes context and guidance and relationships and not just parking kids in front of a computer. But and I'm sure you gentlemen know much more what's happening around the country, but I was really I was at an innovative education session at a conference, And I don't, every state was not represented. But it was clear to me for those that were that we were ahead of the ball game, that we really, what we're talking about, especially with SB 96, the Education Transformation Act coming into the 21st century, and what we are talking about doing on a statewide basis with districts collaborating and, you know, allowing students maybe from a village to be able to take a class in Anchorage, that's not being talked about in other states. And I am asking, as educator innovators, that you help us, because there was a recent announcement that USDA Deputy Secretary announced that the part of the Trump administration's capital infrastructure package, which we usually think of roads and bridges and ports, is going to include funding for broadband. And because we are really ready to move forward in this, and especially if we can get that bill passed, I think we are sitting in a place where we can say, we're ready, you know, give us some of that federal funding and we'll show you what we can do. And I believe our congressional delegation is willing to come on board. And I would just ask that you help us communicate that with our congressional delegation. I think that this is a prime opportunity right now. If we can get that bill passed and you continue your work, and there's districts that are really shining lights and examples and are ready to help transition us. And with the Quintillion project, we've got some villages now ready to go. And if we can get some of this rural broadband, we can get more of the rural areas. You know, my heart has been for those that have been slipping through the cracks. And it's like I say, no more. You know, let this be part of it. It's going to help with the recruitment retention. We can't necessarily, there aren't going to be enough teachers nationally. So if we can have a great teacher that's in Fairbanks maybe that can help in some villages, that's, you know, it's part of the solution for Alaska, and I believe we can lead the way. So I would ask that you help us really advocate to be part of that package coming out of D.C. Thank you.
Continue.
We have this slide here because, you know, partnerships aren't just amongst the professional organizations in the state with educators. It also goes outside. Car Safeway just recently provided about $200,000 for 40 teachers in an innovation grant. And so we're grateful for that. And we're hoping to, as that grant moves forward, making sure that those teachers that have earned those grants report out on it. What are the results? How can we carry that forward? Also, with BP, they've provided some grants through their Teachers of Excellence program. Also, they've provided a scholarship for students in becoming principals as well, and then also for our students themselves when they graduate, they also on to college, and it's a STEM focused scholarship that they provide, which is fantastic. So. Those are just the tip of the iceberg. One partner that next time we hopefully get the chance to come in and present to you is you. You've all been involved with the Education Challenge, mm-hmm. and I'm hopeful that you'll be coming to these professional learning opportunities that we have for our educators across the state to get a good sense of how these things are being developed, and then also what we're starting to ask all of the people that attend this. What are you doing with it? How did it work? And what do we need to change to make sure that it sticks and it's working? That truly is a big piece. And I believe that our outside partners like this will become engaged in that process. Next steps, we do want to increase our representation and participation across the groups. There are some key stakeholders that we need to include in this. We do want to develop some long-term processes for consistency of implementation and access. And we are hopeful to support each other. We've had this year, we started with the superintendents. We had some opportunity through a video conference to talk to the actual author of Blended, Disrupting Education, Michael Horn. We talked to a couple of other people that came and down here to Juneau that talked to us about actual blended learning in the classroom. And those things have now carried through. The principal's conference had a pre-conference that was focused on personalized learning with that graphic that you saw with the four components. And then just recently, ASDN had a huge part in that where Michael Horn, he's a nationally recognized figure who is very involved in changing education, transforming it, and very exciting that he was here. And then upcoming, we will have our ASTE conference. If you do get a chance to escape here, I encourage you to go to that, because there is a lot of teachers that are so excited about the various opportunities that are available through technology, but really focused on meeting that individual student's needs. And then we will meet in April in tandem with the Department of Education when we do a wrap-up with ESSA, and then also with some of the work here with the Ed Challenge. And that's where we're going to really move forward together. And that's probably the only way that we can improve the results around the state of Alaska. There has to be the communication. There has to be collaboration. And we have to work on it all together.
So with that,
yeah, the bus is starting to leave the station, and we're all getting on, and we hope and know that you will be there with us, and I certainly appreciate Representative Johnston's comments about, you know, we don't want to get in the way, but we are partners too, and you are an accountability piece for us, and we do want to come back, and we do want to share with you what we're doing, and we want those tough questions so that we can keep improving and moving forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dusek. I appreciate the invitation to the ASTE conference. If you could provide us with a list of professional development opportunities, it's hard to get out of here during the session, but if it works, it works. So I'd appreciate knowing about that. And I'm sure there are post-session opportunities in the late spring and the summer that I would love to be able to participate in. Any questions from the members? Okay, seeing none. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for putting up with all the technical difficulties of getting here. I appreciate that you're all here. And with no further business before the committee, we are adjourned at 9:42 a.m. Thank you.